Historically, hospital operating margins have been slim. Now, they're pretty much non-existent. Yet, more than ever, we need to optimize our margins to succeed. Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this episode, I'll continue my discussion with Selena Burns on the challenges facing our hospital operations and what we could do to optimize operational performance. Selena, so let's get right to it. What's happening to healthcare operating margins?
Well, as of Q4, on average, the operating margins in Q4 2019 were hovering around 3.1%. So let's call it 3%. With all of the economic headwinds, some of them demographic related to those baby boomers growing into Medicare at a 3.6 million annual clip, others related now to acceleration in ambulatory, et cetera, and the drive toward lower cost sites of care. If one does nothing, the conversation we've been having and seeing play out is operating margins. If nothing was done, unfortunately, everyone is initiating activity. The likelihood would be that many hospitals would be facing a flat to negative operating margin by year end. The good news is there's been an accelerated focus I've seen across all segment sizes, all markets in recognition that there needs to be an acceleration on speed to change, ratcheting down those operating costs and garnering those efficiencies as quickly as possible, again, to reinvest in the new care delivery models.
You know, obviously negative margins is unsustainable for most systems. So what can organizations do to improve their margins?
We are recommending very thoughtful strategic planning in the area that I just earlier referenced in financial and business model optimization, in productivity. So the reference that you made earlier in our conversation regarding RVU productivity, it's still obviously critical in a fee-for-service world, but we do need to begin preparing for the day in the not-too-distant future when perhaps 20% of reimbursement may be in an alternate payment methodology. And I don't think that projection is too far off. It's likely that in the next 36 months, 20% of the reimbursement will be in something other than fee-for-service with alignment toward clinical and quality outcomes. So beginning to accelerate and ramp up the best practices in quality outcomes now is the time to be focused on that. If you are in an ACO and you think about the ACO, the mission for ACOs is to reduce the cost of care for all patients. If you're a hospital model, that means you're reducing the cost of care at your own expense. And so whatever those reductions are, they need to be inversely or conversely offset by cost reductions within the system.
So you would refer to that as stabilizing?
That is stabilizing and preparation. I see it as the earlier stages of the growth strategy. So in growth, we're looking really at site of care optimization. There are those in the market that think one of the reasons that we're in the situation that we're in is because there's too much service. So perhaps too much radiology, too much imaging, too much line by market. And so service line rationalization, and I've been thinking about it not dissimilarly to how we think about our financial portfolio. So do you have the right mix of services relative to market demand and need? Have you evaluated which service lines may be more loss leader oriented? And conversely, in parallel, which ones have a stronger growth trajectory? And how do you balance all of that to, again, create a service line portfolio that's relevant to the market and then also financially sustainable?
So after stabilizing, what should we do next?
The next 24 months really needs to be focused in the area that I was just referencing and in conversations here of late. Everyone, as you know, most systems in the last several years have been on a significant acquisition track. I frequently lead with a mantra that acquisition is not a strategy, it's a strategy enabler. And many in response to that have shared that the assets that have been acquired either are not financially performing well today and need to be reconfigured, right-sized. And then in some cases, they just have been sub-optimized. So it's a great opportunity to take a look at what the facility optimization, perhaps with new service line, introducing new service line capabilities for those who have been heavily reliant on ED utilization and have seen reductions there as a result of the transition to virtual. What's the opportunity to perhaps refocus and repurpose those resources into a new revenue growth distribution channel? So the next 18 to 24 months, and really the work now in planning what that roadmap is and then executing on it over the next 18, 24 months, Tom, is where I think we'll see most of the focus in the market.
Can you elaborate a little bit further on the areas of focus we need to take specifically during this stage?
Well, a lot of rigor and discipline clearly is going to be required to scale. So when we think about the healthcare industry, I don't know that it always conjures up thoughts, at least in the legacy spaces, across systems and payers as being high-speed change agents. So it's really going to require, I think, one of the biggest adjustments is going to be in scaling and in adopting a different level of ability and a nimbleness, agility in execution on scaling on the numerous areas of cost reduction, which, again, I've highlighted a couple in elimination of clinical care variation. That could also be down to the supply chain. So I'll use orthopedic surgery as an example. In hip replacement, is there cost benefit and clinical quality benefit to eliminating variation on supply? So it's really about taking a no stone unturned approach to looking at all opportunities for clinical cost improvement that also derive operating efficiencies. And that's where the hardest work will come. And obviously, it's going to require discipline because these are not things that can be accomplished with the flip of a switch. So it'll require tenacity.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. And I certainly see where physician leadership is going to be, again, paramount for leading to scaling, to being nimble. You can't possibly do it with cost reductions without having the physicians involved. And then in reference to actually decreasing that care variation, physician leadership is going to be key, if not paramount, again. And specifically when it comes to supply chain, are you using physician leadership? Are you using data to engage them with your supply chain strategy? I certainly see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the data piece of the equation, because I can tell you, given my background in, as I said, back to the future risk contracting, perhaps not surprising to you, Tom, I've unwound as many poorly performing risk contracts as have been executed, mainly because 20 years ago, those contracts were executed and there wasn't a lot of data to support clinical performance improvement. And it turns out you can't manage what you can't measure. So analytics and having the right analytics to inform decision making is going to be critically important. And I believe this represents an opportunity. And I have stated it this way when speaking to hospital leadership, that it's an opportunity to engage the physician in running the business like a business. There frequently has been a void in priorities between hospital leadership and the physician community.
I've often said that the hospital is my workshop. I just don't own it.
It's a great analogy because it's in that space where there's an opportunity to really kind of shift that into more of a joint venture partnership.
So during the third phase, what does operations look like?
You're kind of moving in toward that evolve arena. All of this really is about trying to shift and redesign an operating care model that meets not only the emerging near-term market needs, but longer term. And as I think about it in terms of creating a destination care brand. And I've said to hospital leaders every now and then that you have to stand for something more than a 10-second wait time in the ED. Now, I was saying that before the pandemic. Clearly, post-pandemic, that's become glaringly obvious. And I've had hospitals and physicians ask, when I think about destination care, I think about some of the bigger global care facilities. And what I mean by creating a destination care model is when you're thinking about your service line, there's probably not a hospital in the country that doesn't stand out as superb in delivering women and children's health care, as an example, or orthopedic procedures, whatever those centers of excellence, areas of excellence that the hospital possesses and the physician community assets can support in that reconfiguration of service line. The goal really should be end state is that we come out of this with each hospital having a brand that stands for not only a movement away from episodic care, reactive care, but more oriented toward wellness, not only in all the places that we think of today that are standard, but also in that health inequity space, which we see has become a clear area of need in this post-pandemic environment.
So are there any good examples of organizations optimizing margins?
I share the example of the population health ACOs who are doing a great job and reducing the cost of care. Again, the ones that are in the hospital ACO model, we have worked with several who are now looking at that model as being part of that new evolved care delivery platform. But it obviously necessitates, to the extent if doing it right, you're reducing revenue at your own expense as a hospital. It necessitates then determining where within the legacy high fit fixed cost structure, do we have the opportunity to take those cost reductions and translate them into operating efficiencies? And we were in the early stages of that kind of thought process and roll up your sleeves effort last year. We're now seeing that accelerate. And so there's any number of examples. We see systems who in the core model are doing relatively well and have been, but they acquired community hospital assets that are underperforming. And so having to not necessarily focus as much on the core as in the acquired asset space. So as I said earlier, many have been on a very aggressive acquisition track. There are a lot of conversations happening right now around how do we optimize what we bought? How do we get the most out of that return on investment?
So Selena, you've made a lot of excellent points today. Are there any takeaways for our discussion for our listeners?
Resist the urge to go back to normal. Really important, I think, as an opportunity to recreate, renovate, redesign the things that are working well and maximize those, and then reconfigure those where there's opportunity for creating care models that, again, are not only more efficient, but also translate into a better convenience care patient experience.
You know, Selena, what I've seen is that among organizations that have a dyad, a true dyad between operational leadership and clinical leadership, they are the ones that are most successful. And the era of actually having silos between operation and clinical leadership is over if you're going to be successful in the future. Am I saying that correctly, or is that your vision?
That cannot be emphasized enough, Tom. Problems cannot and will not be solved in silos. So silos are probably, and when we think about the biggest obstacle, I reference scaling. Scaling cannot be accomplished at the optimum level, at the necessary level in this environment in silos. And the last thing I'd say is with that, resist the urge to go back to normal. So job one might also include breaking down those walls.
Selena, we've reached the end of our discussion. Thanks for taking time to join us for today, and particularly for the last two episodes. I appreciate your insights. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, and send your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast in the latest healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.